everybody. Good afternoon. Stan Turner with you here on, what is it, kind of a sticky Saturday afternoon here, heading toward mid-July. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful out there. We got a little cloud cover in the East Metro right now. Kyle, you've been outside in the last hour or so. Not a bad day, huh?
No, it's not too bad out.
Little sprinkle? Little
I was out there.
Okay. No reason to stay indoors, folks, right?
No, not at all.
Get outside. Enjoy it. It is summer. Far better than last summer at this time, anyway. We had that hot, steamy, subtropical stuff. I saw parrots in the trees in my yards. It was getting that bad. Wow. Well, we're so glad that you're with us here today. Thank you so much. We have a show for you. We're going to get to the main events here in just a minute. But first, something from the newsroom. I wasn't listening real closely. I'm sorry. I was distracted down the hall during that newscast we just heard. But here's the news, sad news. Tommy Ramone, co-founder of the seminal punk band The Ramones and the last surviving member of the original group, has died. Tommy Ramone passed away yesterday. He was 65. Tommy Ramone, who's a drummer, co-founded The Ramones in 1974 in New York, along with singer Joey Ramone, bassist Didi Ramone, and guitarist Johnny Ramone. All four band members had different last names, but took the common name Ramone. The band influenced a generation of rockers, and their hit songs, I Wanna Be Sedated and Blitzkrieg Bop, among them, earned them an induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2002. Clad, you know, you've seen them, those of you who know the group, clad in leather jackets, long black mops of hair. The group of motley misfits started out in legendary New York clubs like CBGB and Max's Kansas City, where they blasted their rapid-fire songs on stage. Tommy Ramone, gone at the age of 65, last of the Ramones. It's 12:08 right now. We're at, you heard, 75 degrees. One more item of interest, historical interest, before we get to our main event here today. Oh, wow. Talk about, you know, we're all talking about this All-Star game coming up in Minneapolis on Tuesday. Well, here's a baseball promotion that went wild, went wrong, went crazy 35 years ago today. Some of you will remember this. Disco Demolition Night took place on July 12th, this date, 1970. At Comiskey Park in Chicago. At the climax of the event, a crate filled with disco records was blowing up on the ball field between games of a twi-night doubleheader between the White Sox and the Tigers. Many of those in attendance had come to see the explosion rather than the games, and they rushed onto the field at Comiskey after the detonation. The playing field was damaged both by the explosion, no kidding, and by the rowdy fans, to the point where the White Sox were required to forfeit the second game of the doubleheader to the Tigers. This is all true. On this date in 1979. In the late 70s, folks, you might recall, dance-oriented disco music was very popular. Huh? Think the Bee Gees. Particularly after featuring in hit films such as Saturday Night Fever. Despite its popularity, though, disco sparked a backlash from rock music fans. This opposition was prominent enough that the White Sox, seeking to fill seats at Comiskey Park during a lackluster season, engaged Chicago shock jock and anti-disco campaign painter Steve Dahl for the promotion at the July 12th doubleheader. Attendees would pay 98 cents and bring a disco record. Between games, Dahl, this local disc jockey, would destroy the collected vinyl in an explosion, which he did. Now, White Sox officials had hoped for a crowd of about 20,000 or about 5,000 more than usual. Instead, at least 50,000 people, including tens of thousands of Dahl's adherents, packed the stadium, and thousands more continued to sneak in even after the gates were closed. Many of the records were not collected by staff and were thrown like flying discs or saucers from the stands. Now, after Dahl blew up the collected vinyl records, thousands of fans stormed onto the field, and a local Chicago reporter described it this way as it happened.
Police moved in. And it took them a considerable amount of time. A bonfire had been built in the middle of center field. Police tried to clear the unruly crowd, pushed them out. Finally got them off the field, although, again, it took a long time. Perhaps some arrests. It's hard to tell.
Some arrests, all right. We'll never know how many, but quite a few. Since the 1940s, Chicago White Sox owner Bill Veeck had been noted for using promotions to attract fan interest. He stated, "You can draw more people with a losing team plus bread and circuses than with a losing team and a long still silence." His son, Mike Veeck, was in 1979 in the promotions director for the White Sox. Mike Veeck wrote in a letter to a fan before the season that the team management intended to make sure that whether the White Sox won or lost, the fans would have fun. Well, I guess they did. You know who Mike Veeck is? He is the principal owner of the St. Paul Saints. We've had him on the show here on the weekday show, and he described that wacky night at Comiskey Park 35 years ago when they blew up disco right there in center field. Great days in history. There you go, folks. My goodness. Okay, on this show right now, in about a half hour from now, we're going to call in Brent Peterson from the Washington County Historical Society to find out what's going on. We always enjoy looking backward or, you know, with this guy, a great historian. And by the way, the Society is sponsoring an event tomorrow, 2 o'clock here in Stillwater. We'll tell you more about it. We're going to be hearing from a local author who has written the book Conspiracy, Who Really Killed Lincoln? Dean Erdahl will discuss the conspiracy and theories surrounding one of the most infamous murders in American history, the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. So Brent and I will discuss that a little bit later in the program, among other things. Well, folks, here we go. Most of us are focused on summer. It's been a tad wet, but otherwise lots of warm days and mellow nights. Pretty nice. Summer like it ought to be. But not everybody is thinking summer. Our friends at History Theater in St. Paul are thinking autumn, winter, and spring. Yes, they have just about everything in place for the 2014-2015 performing season. And to give you lots of time to save the date and mark your calendars, we are going to lift the curtain just a little bit this noon hour so you have a good idea what and who is coming to the stage at History Theater beginning in September. As always, the point man at History Theater is artistic director and oftentimes play director Ron Peluso, a fine, fine fellow. He now in his umpteenth season at that wonderful playhouse in downtown St. Paul. Ronaldo, welcome back. How many seasons is it now, my man?
It's going to be 20. Wow.
Big sigh. Was that a sigh of relief, of contempt, of happiness? Or aren't they paying you enough, boy?
Well, there you go.
Well, welcome back. It's good to see you. We always like to do this kind of in the summertime to let people know what's coming down the pike. And you've sent out the brochure on the coming season. It should be hitting mailboxes all over the place here. And it looks like a fetching and a fine season coming here. So we want to kind of walk the listeners through it. We know that a lot of folks who listen to this program wind up in the seats down in History Theater, and they are always satisfied customers, my friends. So you brought a couple of the actors along, too, today, the people who will portray the folks in these plays. And Ron, we want to start with the first production, which opens in September. And give us a little overview of that one, please.
Well, this is a new play by Garrison Keillor.
Who's that?
Garrison Keillor.
Oh,
you may have heard of him.
I think I have. Let me Google that here. Okay.
For those of you who listen to the radio on occasion. Public radio, that is.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, Garrison's just celebrated his 40th anniversary of A Prairie Home Companion.
Right, right.
And so his play, Radio Man, kind of celebrates a look at his career and and how it all began and some of the heartaches and heartbreaks along the way.
Okay. Who plays the man, the guy in the Red Sox? Who does that?
Well, he's sitting right next to us.
Yeah, I thought so. Yes.
Whoa.
Pierce Bunting. Pierce, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you here, especially in view of the fact you can't find a parking place here in Stillwater this time of year. How did you... You parked on the river, did you?
I just kind of nudged everybody out of my way. I said, I got a show to do.
You do, and you're here, and we're glad of it, and we can't wait to see you portraying Mr. Keillor up there on stage. Well, you know, one of the publicity photos here does, there's an uncanny resemblance there. Of course, you look different in person here. You look different on the radio, too, may I say. No, but the hair
is... I've
got a
face made for radio.
No. But you look, kind of a passing resemblance to him. It's going to be fine. You're a tall guy like he is. And, you know, tongue firmly in cheek. You're going to have fun with this one, aren't you?
I think so. You know, we did the first workshop for this back in January, and Ron's wife, Sue, who is...
Sue Scott. One of the regulars on the Keillor Show.
That's right. She, we just talked about him, and She said, if you can find a way to kind of channel your own inner Garrison Keillor, you know, maybe that's the best thing to do.
How the heck do you do that?
I don't know, because when you're standing in the room next to him,
yeah, and he says, you're not me.
and so
my retort,
well, he doesn't want me to be him.
My retort would be, you're not me, and you're lucky.
That's what I was thinking.
Right. Oh, yeah, Sue Scott, a regular cast member. She once told me, she was on the show with Ron here. It was a fun day. I asked her what it was like working with him, and she said, it can be challenging in the sense that, you know, I'll do a skit, I'll do a voice, and he'll say, well, it was pretty good, but sound taller.
Yeah.
How do you sound taller or shorter? But yeah. Give us a little sense of how you approach this, portraying Keillor, a national figure on the radio and in the arts.
It's a good question, because we're just starting out with it, really. We did this workshop in January, and we've got another one coming up next week where we're developing the play together as an ensemble. I don't know Garrison very well. We've met a few times and worked together a little bit on this. I think I have to approach it like it's a play, like it's a story of a man. And I'm not sure, quite sure what that story is yet. I'm looking over.
Oh, really? Okay.
Because we're not sure. It's kind of got a basic shape. I think it takes place during a show, we think, of
a broadcast of Prairie Home. Truly a work in progress.
And, you know, I'm the host, you know, yeah, so sure, you might sure. say, well, he's not Garrison Keillor, but certainly.
You will be. You will be.
I'll try. I'll do whatever it needs to be done. Right. By any means possible, I guarantee you that.
Well, Pierce, you know the show. Before we go ahead with you on this, your theater credits are fantastic. They're very, very, very good. Pierce has appeared on Broadway, and we're not talking about the avenue that cuts through North Minneapolis. We're talking about the one in New York City, Broadway, and in the national tour of Mamma Mia, and you play Bill McCoy on HBO's Boardwalk Empire.
Yes, that's right.
Goodness, you're out there, my man.
I've been around.
The name is familiar, the face is familiar, and now we got to figure out how we're going to do the Garrison Keillor show.
Yeah.
And, well, it'll be fun. A lot of tongue-in-cheek. It's comedy. It's fun. It's homespun stuff, and Ron, Lake Wobegon, some of the characters, will they figure in this?
They will. You know, one of the things... radio, of course, it's all in our imagination, so it's kind of fascinating that after 40 years, these characters from Lake Wobegon are actually going to show up on stage in flesh and blood. And so I think that's going to be quite an interesting challenge for us.
Yeah, it is. It is. Pierce, is it intimidating to be...
Totally.
Yeah, I bet it is.
Completely intimidating. Yeah. Especially when you're just sitting in the little rehearsal room and Garrison's sitting there, you know, with a pad of paper and a pen and... he starts, you know, there's 50 songs to learn, and could you teach me this one? I thought you'd never ask. Oh, and he starts singing, you know, and he knows every song
that's ever been
written.
Right, right.
And he is this, he's like the Library of Congress.
Yeah, he is, without an index.
Library of Congress. Yeah, okay. So it's pretty stunning to be around him and to see him just go, oh, that doesn't work this time. And write stuff, new stuff.
Okay.
And you know, I'm still with it.
Okay.
So that must mean I'm not bothering him too much.
Not too much. No.
I wouldn't say that he's given me praise.
Well, we have a whole week.
Well, yeah, we've still got a week.
giving you praise. He has a distinctly different persona off the air than he does on the air. There's no doubt about that. Mm. And so you're dealing with partly that, too. The guy you know who's on stage or on the radio, both.
Or imagined. Right.
Or imagined, right. Yeah. So, like Ron said, radio is the theater of the mind. That's why it's better than television in so many ways. So much fun. So go.
I was going to say that's a fun thing about this first workshop we did, culminated in a reading to the public for the public at the History Center. And one real fun thing about doing it was this combination of outside, you know, like having a body like a normal human being and performing a play, but also being inside at the same time because it was radio and we're talking into microphones. And it was great, actually. It's a great combination, I think. Weird things will happen.
That's guaranteed.
Well, I think, you know, one of the interesting things, Stan, about Garrison's show and why people love Prairie Home Companions so much is it's, as you know, radio is intimate. It's like I'm talking to you.
Right. I'm in your ear.
I'm whispering in your ear. And he does that, and 5 million people think it's just meant for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so to take this and transfer it to the stage... is going to be our challenge.
Yeah, you know, it is. Now, he Keeler, has written this thing. It sounds like he's adjusting it, rewriting it as he goes during your sessions here. Okay, mm-hmm. You're not in rehearsal yet. You're still trying to cobble it together here.
We have a play, and then this coming week we have 20 hours with Garrison and the cast to actually kind of refine and rework. Sure. And then he goes away to Europe on this cruise, and then he comes back and he goes back to Paris, and we go into rehearsal.
I'll be in Mankato.
And they open.
You'll be in Paris.
You know, Prairie Home opens across the street on the 20th with their street dance, and we open the following week. So it's all happening.
It's going to happen fast, isn't it? Yeah. You going to make fun of the Lutherans like he does?
Oh, no.
I ain't going to do that now. None of them. Tuna casserole dinners in the church basement.
I'm not even from this state, so I can't.
Oh, don't try to cop out now. We're on to you, Pierce.
All right. Yeah.
Is that your real name, Pierce, by the way?
It is.
It's Axel, isn't it?
I don't have a middle name. No, it's Pierce.
You know, Stan, when Garrison came, and it was his idea to write this play, he said, yeah, I want to write a play about, 40 years of Prairie Home.
Yep.
And I said to him, I said, that's great, Garrison, but you have to write something that we don't know about you.
Oh.
And he took that to heart, and I think there's a scene in the play that will become very evident that it's really kind of special.
Very few people talk to him that way. That's a good thing. I mean, it's a very positive thing.
Well, I told him that what we do at History Theater is we try to tell these real stories, and the heart, and, you know, there's shows that are fancy pants, but there are shows that are about the man in the pants, and those are the ones that we want to know.
Yeah, I like that. Tell me something I don't know.
Yeah, tell me something I don't know about you. And
that's good.
I think we're going to see that in this play.
I'm looking forward to it. I really am. Pierce, do you sing? Will you be singing?
I will be singing.
I hear the old piano.
I think everybody's good.
Hello, love.
Some people love his voice, some people don't. I think they'll probably feel that way about me, too.
You've won us over already,
Pierce. Oh, I'm glad.
Pierce Bunting, what a guy. In your publicity stuff here, Ron, you say that Lake Wobegon, the people of Lake Wobegon, arguing about morality in a bag of frozen peas, I guess. P-E-A-S.
Yes.
Can you enlighten us on that, sir?
Well, one of the sketches in the show is about one of the characters in Lake Wobegon passes away. And the family, you know, has this gigantic issue about, how to deal with death. And I think as Garrison's gotten older, you know, mortality has become one of these themes that he deals with. And it's a very funny scene as the old man dies coming up the stairs carrying a bag of frozen peas. And the frozen peas end up somehow in the spaghetti sauce for dinner.
So. How appropriate is that? Is it appropriate to use those peas that were held by a dead body?
These
are the kind of questions that we're going to answer.
When I think of comedy, I think of frozen peas in the casket. I don't know about you guys, but let's have our other actor guest here with us move in here. Pierce, we'll get back to you shortly after you thaw out the peas over there. Okay, thank you. Well, okay, that's it. That's the opening, the debut program of the programmer play for the 2014-2015 season called Radio Man by Garrison Keeler and starring Pierce Bunting and a host of thousands from Lake Wobegon. That'll be fun. Still being, you know, the corners being rounded off, being put into shape, and that's going to be fun. This is the normal process.
I mean, because, you know, we haven't decided who's playing Guy Noir yet, but Guy Noir and the Cowboys and the Ketchup People, they all show up.
As you well know, I'm available. And, usually I've been shooting for props. Maybe I could be a tree. I could be a microphone. You know,
I try this,
Andrea. Every time he comes down here, I've never gotten a part yet. Not even a prop. Isn't that a shame? Well, okay, so Radio Man kicks off the season at History Theater in downtown St. Paul. One of my favorites, sir. What is it?
We're bringing back, by popular demand, Buddy, the Buddy Holly story.
Did you hear that, folks? By popular demand, yes.
I've had so many of our patrons say, when are you going to do it again? So it's been 3 years, most of our band's coming back.
Great.
The Crickets, and then we have some new faces, like Andrea, who's sitting right next to us.
Andrea San Miguel. Andrea, welcome to the show, welcome to KLBB, and I guess welcome to History Theater. This is your debut at the theater, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Get close to the microphone so people can see how pretty you are. Beautiful eyes. You will portray Maria Elena, who is Buddy Holly's wife.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
She's still around, I think, isn't she?
She is. She's a feisty thing. Yeah, I've seen some interviews with her recently, actually, and she's 81 years old and alive and kicking. She's kicking.
She really is. I think she does show up, along with the actual Peggy Sue, at the yearly observance of the death of Betty Holly and the Big Bopper and Ritchie Valens after they performed in February of 1959 at the Surf Ballroom in Clear Lake, Iowa. So Maria Elena does show up from time to time down there.
Yes, she does. But what I actually just recently found out is she's actually never seen the gravesite. And she's like never wanted to go over there.
She didn't go to the funeral.
Yeah, she didn't go to the funeral either. Well, it's pretty hard for her.
She was with child at the time, and I believe she miscarried after he died.
Not even two months after.
That's right. Tragedy on top of tragedy. You're going to portray quite a woman, though. They had a short but a very intense married life, didn't they?
Yeah, they weren't even married for 7 months. I think 6 months into it, he passed away, and she was so devastated about it because she had some dreams about him.
Kind of a premonition
That he wasn't going. She didn't want him to go on the tour, and if he did, she wanted to go with him. But he decided to leave her behind, and she had these dreams of a giant fireball falling from the sky and landing in this field. And it was kind of tragic when she, I think, realized what that really meant. And yeah, it's very, very strange.
Very eerie. So this portrayal of Buddy Holly, does it basically take place at that what turned out to be their last concert at the Surf Ballroom in Clear Lake?
Yes, a little bit.
We kind of get the first act is the whole history of Buddy and the Crickets and how they formed, and you know, the studios in New Mexico with Norman Petty. And all of that. And then the second act kind of moves us towards, you know, as some of you out there might have been at the concert in St. Paul the week before, you know, and then they went down to Clear Lake, and then, of course, the tragic plane crash.
It was a dreadful tour called the Winter Dance Party, and Holly and company were in this broken-down old school bus. It was a winter like we just passed through, unrelenting cold, ice, and snow. The heater on the bus broke, and these guys literally were freezing. You know, and it was just wicked. They had to go out there to make money. Holly had a string of successful top 40 hits, but he was out of money, and they had to go out again, right?
Right, because he had broken up with the Crickets and moved to New York, and he had a baby on the way. Man's got to eat. Yeah. That's what he tried to do.
Yeah. Man's got to suffer first, I guess. Sadly, it all wound up tragically. And I was telling, I was telling you, Andrea, before airtime today, that there is something of a shrine out there in the cornfield, the farm field, where the plane crashed, killing Holly and Valens and J.P. Richardson, the Big Bopper. People leave talismans. They leave mementos, car keys, credit cards, guitars.
I gotta get myself over there.
Yeah, really. It sounds very bizarre, but these are the items people feel compelled to leave as a tribute to Holly and the others. It's amazing the hold that Holly and these other two still have on us in the pop culture. So you're part of a very important piece of theater here, and a collective memory, I'd say, too.
Yeah, I personally really want to go and see that site. It's going to be a trip of mine, really, that I make, hopefully, before, honestly, the show starts, because I find it really, really fascinating. I want to put like a little rose there, because that's apparently what happened when Buddy went ahead and proposed to Maria Elena. Within, he like met her and asked her on a date. She had to get approval from her aunt, who she was living with at the time.
Right. This was in New York.
Right. And she had never been on a date before. And Buddy Holly just swept her off her feet and handed her a rose. And within 5 hours of the date, just said, "Will you marry me?" And she said, "Yes."
In fact, the New York City restaurant where that proposal happened has a plaque in the booth where it happened to this day. And Ron, I can't remember the name of the restaurant, but I can find it. But anyway, it's still there. So, it's one of those little cultural icons, those venues you want to visit if you're a Holly fan. So, Ron, this is going to be another one, and the man reprising the role, we must mention this.
Yes, Nick Freeman returns.
Nick Freeman, he nailed him perfectly. I love the guy. He was on the show here a couple times.
Yeah, Nick is great, and most of the cast is coming back. We have a new Big Bopper and a new Ritchie Valens and a new Maria, but the rest of the gang are are returning.
Oh, great. Well, Andrea San Miguel, break a leg, break two of them. You're going to do a great job out there.
Well, thank you very much.
This is your first time on stage over there at History Theater.
It is.
You've just completed some special theatrical work with the U of M in conjunction with the Guthrie Theater, too, haven't you?
Yes, well, I graduated them from there not too long ago, but I've been also working in the cities, the Illusion Theater, Theater Latte Da, just around, and it's been great.
It's great to meet you. Thank you so much. I can't wait to see you up there on stage.
Thank you.
It's okay if I dance in the aisles that night?
Oh, please, please. I hope you dance with me.
Can you dance?
No.
I didn't think so.
Thank you. I've got a retort for you, but I'm not going to use it. I think too much of you. Okay, thanks. Thanks very much. Ron, let's walk us through here. The time is running so, so fast here. We've got to get through the rest of the season if we could here.
Sure.
History Theater. Okay, so we got Buddy Holly taking care of. What's next, and then what's next?
God Girl shows up in the winter. God Girl's a story about a young woman from McAllister College, Christine Holmgren.
Yes.
And it's she was one of the first women in the biggest class of Princeton School of Theology.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And she crashes into the stained glass ceiling, as it were.
Stained glass ceiling.
So I think it's a very interesting story.
Right.
Christine later did become a minister and then a feature writer for the Star Tribune.
Yeah, yeah. I know her. She's a fine writer and an ordained minister. So lots of stories to tell.
She does.
And I believe they're all true.
And they are, as far as we can tell.
That'll be at times a little spicy, I think, too.
Well, I think it's a really important story to tell. She came into my office, actually, a few years ago with a play that I said, this play doesn't fit the History Theater mission. I said, so tell me about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And she started talking. I said, well, write this story.
There's the play.
That's the story.
Yeah. Okay.
So it opens in, I believe, February, right?
Okay, right, February 7th, and runs through March 1st. Then we have the Debutante's Ball at
the
History
Debutante's
Theater.
The Debutante's Ball by Eric Pogi Sumangan. He's a Filipino writer from the Jerome, a Jerome Fellow at the Playwright Center. And he's worked with us as an actor before, but he grew up in the Twin Cities with this Filipino tradition of the Debutante's Ball, and he was an escort. And the young boys are kind of forced to be the escort in this tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fascinating story about how immigrants see themselves and what does it mean to be an American. And do you want to be in your parents' tradition or do you want to create your own tradition?
Right.
And it is a very funny look at immigration. And I think people will find it to be something you can all identify with.
And the coming-of-age play, too.
Yeah.
Yep, that too. Then we wrap her up with River Road Boogie, the Augie Garcia story.
See?
Oh, my, this guy.
Well, you know Augie. He's the...
I knew of him.
The godfather of Minnesota rock and roll.
Absolutely right. He's opened for Elvis Presley one time.
He did. His trademark with his Bermuda shorts and high knee socks. And, he had this like multiracial band in the late 50s. Mexican, Latinos, yeah. Jewish, white kids,
mm-hmm.
Black, Cornbread Harris at the piano.
What was the name of the guy on the piano?
Cornbread.
Cornbread Harris.
Cornbread Harris. Jimmy Jam's father.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, it was this great, diverse band that was playing. And Augie also was a Korean War vet, and he comes back from the war, and the music is what kind of saves him. And his families are, and granddaughters and nieces and nephews are still around. And they came to the reading that we did a few years ago, and it's going to be an exciting, fun piece. Joe Manjaris, who runs Pepito's Restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
And was a former stand-up and actor, has written the piece, and it's going to be just terrific.
It is. Oh, Augie is a beloved character around these parts. I think he grew up on the West 7th Street, the West End part mm-hmm. of St. Paul. There went to Monroe High School, maybe around there. So he's well-known among many folks still here. I think it's high time that somebody, and thank goodness the History Theater is doing it, and giving him his dues, Augie Garcia. This will be great.
That'll be
a good way to finish the season. So this is a grand season again, Ron. Congratulations on it. It's going to be great. And Pierce Bunting, you're going to be involved as the main man, the guy with the Red Sox, portraying Mr. Taylor here in the lead.
Starting it all off.
Yep, that's it.
Me and Ron.
Radio man. Yep. So you're ready to roll, huh?
So I'll need some tips from you.
My first tip. I think we ought to burn some disco records on stage.
Yeah, absolutely. Big fire.
Gang, thank you so much. Ron, anything you want to add about the season? How do we get a hold of it? How do people...
Probably the easiest way is to go to History Theater's website, just historytheater.com. Or you can pick up the phone and give us a call. We're easy to find at 651-292 4323.
You sure about that?
I'm sure. He's got a late night FM for this show, isn't he?
This is early for him. It's new. Yeah,
it is early.
And you're now on the light rail line.
We are. We're right on the green line.
Okay,
so
the
downtown
green line.
St. Paul.
That's how I'll be getting to work.
Not taking the A train, we're taking the green line. Okay, Pierce Bunting, Andrea Salmigal, Ron Peluso, thank you so much. Great good luck for a great season coming at us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stan.
All right.
Thank you, Stan.
Thank you, and Andrea.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, and thank you, Kyle. We better take a break here. We'll get to Brent Peterson and the Washington County Hysterical Society, we call it, right after this. Valley Bookseller in Stillwater invites you and your family to visit the Storytime Trolley. During the Stillwater Logjam Days, you can ride for free. It includes a short ride on the trolley with an author or storyteller. Currently, they have Christy Bajerk and Mark Blando available. You do need a reservation, so call the Valley Bookseller at 651-430-3385 to reserve your spot and book the day you want. Valley Bookseller, great books, great people.
Jan Hassen's Inner Theaters presents the world's most authentic tribute ever in the soul of James Brown, performed by Ty Stone, Soul Brother Number One, and his rockin' 10-piece band. This production is as dazzling as James Brown's own performances, with shouting vocals and feverish dancing. So come out for a funky good time with Ty Stone, the soul of James Brown, for one performance only on Saturday, July 26th. For tickets, call Jan Hassen's Inner Theaters or go to JanHassenDT.com.
The 1920s were a golden age for baseball and custom-tailored clothing. That golden age is back at Jaime's Haberdashery in St. Paul. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Make each visit uniquely yours with hats, suits, casual wear, and accessories. Visit their barbershop for a hot lather shave. It's the golden age again at Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Jaime's.com.
Trust and estate plans aren't only for the wealthy. This is Cameron Kelly from Cameron Kelly Law. A good estate plan will ensure that your family is taken care of and your financial goals are met, even if you're not there to make those important decisions. Taking an inventory of your goals and assets is a good place to start. Call me for a free telephone consultation and to get the process started.
Cameron Kelly Law. For your business, for your property, for you. Call 651-705-6277. That's 651-705-6277. Cameron Kelly Law.
Here we are back, Stan Turner, with you. Now 12:38 in the Twin Cities. We're around, what are we, around 75 degrees in the Twin Cities right now. Maybe going up a little bit higher, getting a little bit humid out there. Not too much in the way of precipitation. So all in all, a fine, I repeat, fine July day. Thank you very much for your company here. We just finished up with the wonderful folks, our friends at History Theater in downtown St. Paul. They've got a great lineup of plays coming for us starting in September. Always a great lineup of events at the Washington County Historical Society. We got the top banana here right now. The guy who makes all that money up there. Was it seven figures now, Brent Peterson?
Yeah, if you count on your toes, that'll be about right. And well, to the right of the decimal point.
Brent Peterson is executive director at the finest County Historical Society in the state of Minnesota, we think. And always, I'd say, almost overfunded by the county itself, isn't it?
You know, we never get cut.
You never get cut because there's nothing to cut.
Exactly.
You don't get a dime from the county,
we
do
don't
you?
Get a dime from any government agencies.
Kyle, maybe you and I ought to throw a buck or two in the can here, huh?
Yeah, you know, I'd probably do that.
I think we better do that, yeah.
But we have some fine, fine members.
You do. And you're sitting close to one, right? Oh, I wouldn't call myself fine, but I am a member.
You are a member. Well, we appreciate that.
You'll notice he didn't say fine member. Okay.
A member.
Well, happy summer.
Well, yeah, you too.
Thank you. You are, of course, part of the vintage baseball team, which
absolutely.
The County Historical Society sponsors.
Do remember, they're the reigning vintage baseball champions of Minnesota.
R-A-I-N-I-N-G. Yeah, reigning, exactly. Yes, okay.
You bet. Right. We play so well.
We play, he says. He suits up, but do you actually play?
If I have to play, that means we're in trouble.
All right. What do? You stand on the sidelines and cheer them on.
I cheer them on. I get involved with the umpires so the umpire's not watching. So
distracted driving, exactly. Distracted ball playing, okay?
That's right.
That's you, Brent. Well, you always serve a useful function.
I have a function of something.
Well, lots of good functions going on
at
the Historical Society this summer, as always. I'm a proud member of the Society. You do a great job. You and your rather small staff.
But yes.
You guys do a lot. You guys and gals do a lot of good things all year long.
We certainly try.
They even have a outdoor ice cream social in January here to raise money.
Makes sense to me. Ice cream doesn't melt.
That's true. That's true.
We waste not want not.
And third degree frostbite. That's a fun thing, too. Well, we've got a very important event tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Let's talk a bit. Let's just get into some detail as much as we can on this one right now. Everybody, and I mean everybody, is fascinated by events like the assassination of President Abraham Lincoln. There are endless theories about it, conspiracy theories, endless books and movies and all the rest.
Absolutely.
Tomorrow we get treated to a talk by a Civil War historian here, a Minnesotan, who also serves in the state legislature. Tell us
about that. Representative Dean Erdahl. I'm not exactly sure in the district in which he represents. It's just not in Washington County. But he has written and lectures about the Civil War. He was a history teacher, I believe. And he does this all across the state. And he has come up with another thing about the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. A conspiracy. Did John Wilkes Booth actually do it? Did they actually catch him, or did he escape the barn in which he supposedly was killed in and lived under another name for many, many years? I think Representative Erdahl will definitely let us know.
Well, he's not peddling any kind of voodoo, half-baked theories about this. I think he's probably going to talk about some of the far-out conspiracies that some people have offered.
Absolutely.
And bring it back full circle and say this is what the historical ledger, what the evidence shows.
Yeah, right? He's not going to talk about anybody behind a grassy knoll or anything that. Not for Lincoln, at least. And it's going to be very, very interesting. It's going to be tomorrow at 2 o'clock, and the price is right. It is free.
That's wonderful. 2 o'clock, where's the Warden's House?
The Warden's House is on North Main Street in Stillwater, 602. Just come in, come up to the porch, ring the doorbell, and come on in. It's going to be a fascinating talk.
Oh, no doubt.
I'm very excited to listen to Representative Erdahl and what he has to say about the assassination of our 16th president.
Absolutely, and I second that emotion. And by the way, he has said here he's the author of, quote, Conspiracy, Who Really Killed Lincoln. Is that a book? Or is that the title of his talk?
I think he did a book, and that is also the title of his talk.
Right. Okay.
I'm not sure, but I would imagine, as any good author would.
Bring his books tomorrow.
He will have his books handy, ready, and ready to autograph as you purchase them.
Very nice. Okay, we'll revisit this toward the end of our discussion here.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, tell us, walk us through what else is going on.
Tomorrow's a pretty interesting day, because not only do we have Representative Erdahl at the Warden's House, we have Vintage Baseball up in Becker. We also have the premiere of the John Runk films that we did several years ago with a legacy grant. It's going to premiere on Channel 2, TPT, at 7 o'clock. And we've been working for...
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow, Sunday's
tomorrow
13th.
Night.
Yep.
Okay.
It's going to be on TPT, Channel 2. Paul Krieger, who was the producer, writer, and editor of this. But this is truly the story of John Runk's hometown of Stillwater.
We need to establish who John Runk was.
John Runk was actually a professional photographer for 65 years in Stillwater, but he also collected photos.
What years did he operate?
He operated from 1899 to 1964 when he died, and he collected even more. So his collection spans more than 100 years, so from the early 1860s of Stillwater all the way until the year he died in 1964. And he loved technology. He probably would just be elated with all this digital stuff that's going on. And he got into 8mm film production. And he took 8mm films of downtown Stillwater, the St. Croix River, beaches, parks.
What year?
This is the films are from 1947 through about 1954. And what he did is he tried to make a moving image of his hometown. There are things in this films that no one's ever seen before in action, like the Marine Ferry Crossing.
Really?
The Last Day of the Trolley in Minneapolis.
Oh, wow.
In 1954.
Light rail.
Light rail back then. And it was great. He set up his little tripod on the street. He just set up the thing and watched them go by.
It's amazing.
Everybody else didn't think about the historic nature of that day.
He did. Great.
He certainly did. And we received a legacy grant to put this stuff into a program, And for we did a half an hour program, plus the DVD actually has 80 minutes of extras that we talk about. And it is just fascinating.
Wow.
And it's finally going to be on TPT Channel 2, and we're so excited that it got to that point.
Tomorrow night at?
At 7 o'clock, and then it runs, I don't know the rest of it, but the rest of the week it runs on occasion through Channel 2 as well.
Runk was primarily a still photographer, and it's his photographs that really are the bedrock of Stillwater and the St. Croix Valley historical record, pictorially.
Absolutely. John Runk's historical collection spans well over 4,000 images. It's the largest individual collection that the Minnesota Historical Society has. It is recorded, it is indexed, it is just fabulous. And he left, when he died, in his will, he left his copyright to nobody.
Really?
Because he wanted that available to everybody. This was his legacy. And he wanted his legacy to live on. And
it does.
And it certainly does. And this film just kind of shows what he did in his life.
That's exciting. We've got so much more to talk about this summer with Brent Peterson of the Washington County Historical Society. Let us take a break. We'll be right back. Valley Bookseller in Stillwater invites you and your family to visit the Storytime Trolley. During the Stillwater Logjam Days, you can ride for free. It includes a short ride on the trolley with an author or storyteller. Currently, they have Christy Bezirk and Mark Blando available. You do need a reservation, so call the Valley Bookseller at 651-430-3385 to reserve your spot and book the day you want. Valley Bookseller, great books, great people.
99 Sonics are here on the ground. 99 Sonics are here.
Jenna.
You take one to town, drive it around.
Jenna.
98 Sonics are left on the ground. 98
Jenna.
Sonics
are...
What, Tom?
Why are you singing?
Well, I'll tell you, Tommy boy. Cue the music. The 2014 Sonic is here at Stillwater Motors. Now the 2014 Sonic is the only vehicle in its class that's built in America. And it's the only vehicle in its class to receive a 5-star overall safety score. Sonic also gets up to 40 miles per gallon. And if you want to see it, get down to Stillwater Motors.
Okay. This all sounds wonderful, but it's got to cost a fortune, right?
Wrong. It's only $13,190.
Get out of town.
I will, in my Chevy Sonic. Give them a call at 651-439-4333. Just off Highway 36 in Stillwater. Right on the corner and right on the price. Find them online at stillwatermotors.com. Now sing with me, Tommy. 99 Sonics are here on the ground. 99 Sonics are here.
Stillwater Motors. Good people to know.
The 1920s were a golden age for baseball and custom-tailored clothing. That golden age is back at Jaime's Haberdashery in St. Paul. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Make each visit uniquely yours with hats, suits, casual wear, and accessories. Visit their barbershop for a hot lather shave. It's the golden age again at Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Jaime's.com.
We're going to jump right back in here, continue our chat with Brent Peterson. He's the head guy over at the Washington County Historical Society, one of the most active and top quality historical societies in the entire state of Minnesota. Every county in the state, 87 counties, has a historical society.
That's great.
You are in the front ranks, my man.
Well, I appreciate that.
Well, we appreciate you.
Well, thank you.
It's great to be a member and partake of all these wonderful events. We've talked about the John Runk film and his stills and the great legacy he leaves for us that we still can enjoy. And there are many other things going on. This is a rich summer, isn't it?
Oh, we have programming coming out almost every weekend, if not every other weekend. And speaking about every other weekend, next Sunday, which is July 20th, up at our Hay Lake School Museum in Scandia, just south of Scandia, we are having our second portion of our Hay Lake School Speaker Series. And our new director up there, Dustin Dubuque, is a very well-informed and well-schooled person on the history of Minnesota wrestling.
Wrestling.
Wrestlers, you got it.
Wow.
And he is going to bring in one of his friends, who is a professional wrestler. His actual name is John Devine, but he his stage name is Horace the Psychopath.
Say that again.
Horace the Psychopath.
Psychopath. What a tender, lovely name.
Exactly. And Horace is going to be up there and do a presentation on the history of Minnesota professional wrestling, going back to the AWA with Vern Gagne and all those other Jimmy Superfly Snuka what, I mean, you could go on Sheik Adlon.
Baron and von Raschke.
Oh, the Claw. That's all the people need to know. He's going to go and talk about the history of Minnesota's professional wrestling, which, of course, turned into what it is today, the WWE or whatever. And
I like the way you put that, whatever it is today.
Well, you know. I followed it in college, yeah. And it was a lot of fun back then. Yeah. When I was in college and I was on the radio station down there, we got to broadcast an all-star wrestling match on the radio. It was quite fun.
Grunt by grunt as opposed to blow by blow.
Oh, he got him upside down. He hit his head. Oh, no, here comes the chair.
Don't forget the turnbuckle.
The turnbuckle.
He throws him into the turnbuckle. And a step-over toe hold.
Oh,
the sleeper hold.
Oh, the Claw, of course. Yeah. And then we'd have some of these wrestlers come up to the booth and then talk to us in their wrestling voices.
Yeah, they a steroid growl.
Exactly. It was just great. And, of course, it's all real.
Yes, of course it is.
But Horace, or John Devine, up there.
Or the psychopath.
The psychopath. He is going to talk about the wrestling and how it was done and how maneuvers. And there's actually a woman from Forest Lake who graduated up there from high school who was in the women's version of it.
And what moniker did she
wrestle
under?
I don't know what moniker she was, but she would come back every now and then all dressed up in the cape and all the tights and all this other stuff. She'd have the makeup on. It was just, and she was very, she was a mother of like three. And it was.
That's my mom.
Exactly. Oh, no. But they're going to talk about the history and how it came from, you know, actual wrestling at one point.
From Greco-Roman.
to a very big stage production.
Right.
And so Horace, or John Devine, Horace the Psychopath, is going to be up there on Sunday, next Sunday, a week from tomorrow.
Isn't that what history's all about, folks?
It is. The transformation of these things are just fascinating to watch. Yeah. And they're going to take us step by step through the history of it. And it's just going to be great.
Brent, things just keep getting better all the time.
It's history, and it is wonderful history. And I don't know what else to say. Except,
I think you've said enough.
I think so, too. But I will say, again, Sunday, 2 o'clock, it is another free program.
Wonderful.
From the Washington County Historical Society.
Where do we see this?
Up at Hay Lake School, on the corner of Olinda Trail and Old Marine Trail.
Okay.
Just south of the metropolis of Scandia.
Yeah, beautiful country. Rolling hills, beautiful, green, lovely, perfect place to hear from the psychopath.
Exactly.
Tell us what else. Share us what else you've got on the summer agenda.
The summer agenda. The speaker series goes until October. So in August, here's a one that's kind of out there. We're going to talk about vintage baseball, the way it was meant to be played. Actually, the speaker is Matt Carter from the Dunn County Historical Society. Mm-hmm. They do want to be as good as we
are. That would be across the river. The St. Croix River.
That's right. Dunn County is
Wisconsin.
That is Menominee.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
you can't bring yourself to say Wisconsin.
No.
Okay, I'll do it for you.
No, thank you. And then on September 21st, we'll have the story of The Objects Tell, The Importance of Primary Sources by Mary Smith.
I like the sound of that.
Mary Smith is in charge of the Stonehouse Museum, which is up in Marina, St. Croix. They have a big exhibit right now at the Historic Courthouse, all from their artifacts. Yeah. And the last one is in October, and we're going to talk about the rise and fall of the lumber industry in the St. Croix Valley. Bob Goodman will be doing that, and he has talked, and he's done the history of Washington County. He's written The Last Rafter about lumbering, and also a Civil War book called In Their Own Words.
So. Yeah, that's a terrific book. The lumbering industry, that was the economic backbone of the valley here, wasn't it?
That's what really promoted and raised this area and really gave us a lot of our history. And as you dig into the history, there's always a little string that attaches itself to the lumber industry. That's why people came here. That's why people settled here and started businesses here. Mm-hmm. It is just fantastic.
We know Stillwater today is a quaint, lovely, touristy place. It's very lovely, especially on a nice summer day like today. Back in the day, back during the height or the depths of the logging industry days, it was not a very lovely place.
It was not a pleasant town. It smelled terrible, according to the writings of the day. You could walk across the river because it was so chunky. It was just
logs. You walked across the logs.
No.
It was just a sewer.
It was a sewer. It was just awful.
Wow.
And you would not think that the river would be so beautiful as it is today. Back in that time, it was just awful.
Yeah.
people who say, oh, I'd love to go live back in the Victorian times.
Hold your nose.
And I would say, have fun. See you later.
And hold your nose. Huh?
And hold your, you don't want to go to the bathroom either.
Amazing. By the way, Brent, I had almost the honor and the adventure on this past July 4th of going, being in Afton. They just finished their parade. They always have a big parade. But there was the Historical Society, that lovely little building. I think it used to be a church and a town hall. First time I'd been in there. That is fantastic. It's in the county. It's in your county.
Yeah.
So a fantastic job.
They do a great job.
They do.
I really appreciate everything that's done down there. Carol Brotzler, Ken Martins, Ray Hansen, and everybody who does that. And that's 100% volunteer.
Wow.
And it is great. They have received some good legacy grants for their exhibits and that type of thing, and they just put on a good show.
Great displays there on the 4th of July. I don't know if it's still up. It probably is, but a display, I think, of about five or six wedding dresses from across the decades. Mm-hmm. In fact, late 19th century, mm-hmm. and then the Roaring Twenties and all the rest, beautifully displayed, and nice descriptions. And, you know, the interesting thing, when we walked in there, Mary and I, there was nobody there to hover over you. It was all in the honor system, as
exactly.
it were. People are expected to be good citizens, and they were. People looked at and looked the exhibits, they read the descriptions, the captions. It was a lovely experience, Brent.
Yes.
It's just symptomatic of what you do at the Washington County Historical Society, too.
They are great. We have some great little museums throughout the county.
Right. Kyle, you held up a sign for me there, and I only briefly looked at it. I better take a look at it. Why don't you tell me what we have here?
We had a call of a lady that was asking when Runquist was going to be on TV.
John Runk. R-U-N-K. Oh, that's okay. John Runk,
that is going to be on tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Channel 2. It is the premiere on Channel 2. So, and then also look at the listings because it's shown other days during the week.
And these are the moving pictures he took back in the late 1940s of Stillwater in color.
Some of it's in color, some of it's in black and white. And it is fantastic.
Some of what is shown no longer exists, is that right? Some of the landmarks around here?
Oh, and there's a whole segment on the ice cutting, ice harvesting in the wintertime to make ice blocks from the Bayport Ice Company. We've never seen that. We've seen photos, but we've never seen it in action. This is what's really unique about it. A lot of good river photos, river scenes that are depicted. A lot of great boats, all the wooden boats. They're just fantastic.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. That's going to be terrific.
So people can actually watch it, or they can pick up a copy of the DVD at the Warden's House Museum on North Main Street or on our website as well.
Okay. You might do all of that tomorrow at the 2 o'clock talk by our friend Dean Erdahl.
Talking about
the Lincoln assassination.
Absolutely. So, there's a lot of reasons to come down to the Warden's House Museum. Right. And if anything, come and take a tour. We have great exhibits up this year.
You do. It's one of my favorite places. Let's see. You've got a brand new headquarters for the Washington County Historical Society, which you will not be able to occupy for a little bit yet.
Not until about 2017. We have a renter right now. They're called MnDOT.
Minnesota Department of Transportation.
Yes.
They're building the bridge.
Yeah, okay. They help the company of Tums make a lot of money. But we work with the Department of Transportation, and they are going to be there to the end of 2016, and then we're going to go in for renovations and make that the most modern Heritage Center in the nation.
In the nation.
Well, at least in Washington County and Minnesota. But it is going to be fantastic. We're already starting to talk about what's going up for our first exhibits.
Right. What are you thinking about?
Maybe something to do with, obviously, the lumber industry. Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of great collections of rural schools. We have military collections. Mm-hmm. And when we open it up, it's going to be the 100th anniversary of the World War I. And so many folks from Washington County actually participated in that war.
Okay, this is the 100th anniversary of the beginning of World War I.
Yes.
That's where the U.S. got into it in 1917 and it went through 1918. So it'll still be very much in play. Right now, all the artifacts you have, what do you keep them under your bed at home? You don't have any space, do you?
We have no space.
Right, so you will.
We will. We're happy about that, too.
Right, right. Well, congratulations. You spearheaded the effort to get that facility.
You're almost there.
You're almost there. Congratulations. Brent, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you, sir.
And keep in mind, folks, tomorrow, that free talk at the Warden's House here in the north end of Stillwater on the assassination of President Lincoln. Dean Erdahl, state representative and historian Dean Erdahl there.
Yeah.
Brent, thank you, buddy. Come back in a few weeks. Let us know what's going on.
I certainly will.
Okay, my friend. Thank you. Happy summer to you. Everybody,
you
thank you so much.